the Around the NFL podcast. Don't mess with no horses, bro.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hanses, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Was that a callback to the great horse-fearing Eric Berry?
I think so.
I believe so.
That goes back to the old podcast
days. The ATL Debate Club, one of our... brought my wife on, if you remember, who used to ride horses to talk about the fear. That's what our podcast used to be about. Now it's a crazy football fest. And you got Wes in here. You got a scientist here. You have Greg Rosenthal, one of the great fantasy minds of the 21st century here. He comes over. We have everything cooking now.
All fantasy talk.
Well, Greg went to PFT, and then we poached him. NFL media conglomerate. And away we go.
Mark and Dan were a big part of that, recruiting me, coming over to my house, offering me lots.
Plying you with things that may not have been legal, but we got it done. We got Greg in the building. It is week eight. It is the week eight Sunday show, an exciting show, a great one. TD and Wes, you seem like you have to get something off your chest with TD, right?
TD, he set down the rules with a very heavy hand, I thought, that we are not allowed to wear hats. Now that we're on camera. Look who's wearing a hat tonight.
Melody.
Me if I have a God complex, let me tell you something. I am God.
I think it's more of a hypocrisy complex.
I know that TD is not feeling well. Is that accurate?
That is correct. And I'm just trying to push through, guys.
All right, make it through. Let's try. We're going to try to take it easy on you. We're not going to mess up once. We're just going to roll through the show.
No pressure.
We got a great week of games, and we're also going to get our friend, our newest Around the NFL member, Connor Orr, on the line. He was at the Meadowlands today for that bloodbath for the Jets, which we'll get into a little later in the show. But let's start, as we always do, with some games that really jumped out at us, the games of the day. So let's do it. Let's get right into it, TD. Let's roll. Ben Roethlisberger, the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback, became the first player in NFL history to throw for at least 500 yards in multiple games. This time he did it against the Colts, just leveling Indianapolis, a 51-34 win on Sunday in Pittsburgh. Chris Wessling, I ask you, as a man that is a historian of the game, who loves football, who ingests it like a maniac, where is this on your list of the best quarterback performances you've ever seen?
It's right up there. It might be the best. Hmm. If he had one more pass attempt, he would have had the highest completion percentage ever on 50 pass attempts.
And you went further, about halfway through the third quarter, maybe getting close to fourth, you said this was the best quarterback's game overall in terms of a quarterback matchup that you've ever seen.
I think they ought to do away with the rest of the schedule and just have the Steelers and Colts play each other every week. Hmm. It reminded me a little bit of that Broncos-Cowboys shootout from last year, but Luck and Big Ben were making better throws, like more eye-catching, amazing throws in this game.
I thought your best quarterback performance was in reference to Browns Raiders.
I didn't see that game, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say it wasn't the best.
Here's the funny thing about this game. Andrew Luck went 26 of 45 for 400 yards and three touchdowns, but wasn't even close to the best quarterback of the day. He threw two interceptions. He was mortal. Here's Roethlisberger's line, because we cannot understate how incredible this game was. Big Ben went 40 of 49, 522 yards, six touchdowns, no interceptions. I believe he came 32 yards short of the all-time passing record set years earlier. The only reason he didn't set it is because they decided to run the ball out. They could have easily done it the way they were having their way. Antonio Brown had 133 yards receiving. Heath Miller had 112. Martavis Bryant, who's
Martavis. There's no U in Martavis.
I've spoken with him. He actually told me the way I said it is proper.
You can't just make up your name if there's not a letter in there. You can't call a guy with Martavis Martavis.
Plow on.
All right, Martavis Bryant, 5 for 83, two touchdowns, three touchdowns in two games. That might be a guy that, if he really starts cooking, you got Antonio Brown, who's a top three wide receiver in the league. Got Heath Miller, he's a nice little player. Le'Veon Bell. Chris Wessling was giddy watching this game because he loves the Steelers so much. They're his boys.
An exciting team to watch. It comes from an organic place. I thought today's newsroom was the most excited newsroom we've had all year.
It was a fun day. The thing that stuns me, I can't wait to dive in and watch this game a little closer, is the Colts defense was playing as well as any defense in the league entering this one, and the Steelers get more than 600 yards. What happened to the Colts defense? What do you think was the factor?
Vontae Davis got hurt really early in the game. He has been, I think, maybe the best cornerback in the NFL this year.
Woo.
He's the key to their defense.
Wow.
He and Greg Tuller play press man defense, take man-to-man, and allows Minuski and Pagano to blitz all afternoon. They had to play a lot more zone defense today, and they paid for it, and they weren't able to get any pass rush whatsoever.
I think the other thing with Pittsburgh, we've seen hints of this all year long because they really do have – we talked about maybe they had the best triplets in the AFC early in the year, and there's been some inconsistency. The defense has given them issues. But I'm not that shocked that this happened to that team today. And it's funny to look back when we thought this Big Ben – Todd Haley marriage was headed for utter disaster. I mean, they're really flourishing right now.
Well, I think part of it is, like you said, the talent's been there all along. Part of it is that Big Ben just was absolutely on fire. Every pass he threw was on point. A lot of those incompletions were balls that he threw it like right on the money 25 yards downfield and were knocked away by the defender. Just great plays. And then part of it is that Martavis Bryant is really emerging as this fourth weapon that they needed on offense behind Big Ben, Brown, and Bell. He looks great in red zone packages and as a deep threat. I think he's absolutely crucial to their offense.
It's funny because in the summer we wrote articles about how Bryant was this red zone threat, and then he vanished for a month and a half. But maybe it just takes more than the first 5 weeks of the season for these guys to flesh out.
Right. Well, yeah, Big Ben has mentioned several times that he needed to get his nose in the playbook. It didn't seem like he was trying that hard.
Mm. Greg, I want to thank you for convincing me to take the Steelers as a hero.
Oh, it's gross. But I do like that it's opened up the avenue that we can change our picks at the end of the week if you're feeling strong. So congrats, you know.
Thanks. And you're talking
about another one.
First
you're on fire.
First place in the picks
it's
now.
It's your year. It's
the
your
old
year.
Sleeper. Zeus the sleeper. Let's move on. But
don't,
I just
don't blow it. I mean, now it's your year.
Long way to go, Dan.
If you don't get it, you blew it.
The Arizona Cardinals came up big in the final 2 minutes on Sunday. They got a 75-yard touchdown reception from John Brown and a last-second defensive stop in a 24-20 win over the Philadelphia Eagles. This was a battle between two 5-1 teams. A very good game, marred by a lot of laundry on the field. I think there was 20 penalties for almost 200 yards. But the game itself was a very entertaining game to watch. And it came down to the last possession after the long Brown touchdown. Chip Kelly's offense marched down the field. But I'll tell you this. The genius, Chip Kelly, for all we give him all the credit, and sure, he deserves it because he's so smart. Todd Bowles out-schemed him at the end of the game. They moved the ball down the field. But Todd, he said, no, I'm going to keep coming at you. They bought the blitz. They kept them bringing the house, and Nick Foles couldn't handle it. Threw a couple of bad passes, including one that sailed out of bounds to end the game where they couldn't get 2 feet down. Credit to the Cardinals for getting aggressive and staying aggressive.
Well, credit the Cardinals for always being aggressive, for having a play in the playbook like John Brown going deep on a third down late in the game. I mean, Arians is always going for it. Todd Bowles is always going for it, but he didn't out-scheme Chip Kelly. He out-schemed Nick Foles. You know, 15 quarterbacks in the league, I think, win that game down the stretch without backpedaling 25 yards and throwing passes out of bounds and freaking out. That is Bowles saying exactly what he thinks about Nick Foles, that you can't handle the pressure because a big-time veteran quarterback is going to pick on that one-on-one coverage on the outside and win the game, and he couldn't do it.
And like we were talking about downstairs, we've talked about it all year. Nick Foles is almost impossible to figure out. You look at the stat line at the end of almost every game, throws for over 300 yards. This time it was 400 yards. He set the Eagles' record today with 36 completions in the game. But there's just still too many throws that are terrible throws. He did not have a great game. And, you know, what Greg's saying there checks out. I mean, if a quarterback was making plays, that game was there to be had at the end, but he was not able to take advantage of the overaggression, perhaps, of Arizona.
Every week, Foles seems to be a lightning rod. He's producing, but we're not happy with his mechanics, whatever it is. If you watch him, do you feel like it's something that's fixable? He's a young quarterback still. Is it something that 3 years from now, these issues are cleaned up, or is this who he is and he's ceilinged out?
His footwork's been bad. If you mention mechanics, his footwork's been bad all year. That's been a problem. I don't know that he's that good. I mean, to me, it's even last year, you knew that a lot of what he was doing was Chip Kelly's scheme.
He is giving the Eagles coaching staff and front office the toughest dilemma that you have with quarterbacks. It's like what the Andy Dalton – he's basically right around the Dalton line. What do we call it again?
The AD scale.
The AD scale.
The AD scale. he's right in the middle where he's just good enough to that you don't feel like you're going to move on. But I think they're going to have a really hard decision at the end of the year because I think they'll win a lot of games. Maybe they win some playoff games too, and yet I don't think he's playing well at all.
Dan, after watching this game, do you feel like Larry Fitzgerald was the most underutilized receiver in the league before this week?
It was so great to see Larry Fitzgerald. Wes is alluding to an 80-yard catch and run where he caught essentially a short 3-yard slant from Carson Palmer, darted through two defenders, and then took it to the house. He outran everyone. 31 years old, doesn't put up the same numbers he used to, but that was the glowing example that Larry Fitzgerald is still Larry Fitzgerald, and if they could do a better job of getting him the ball, he could still be that type of receiver.
I don't think he'll be there next year unless he does a massive restructure on the contract, and I don't think Todd Bowles will be there either. I mean, we talked about Arizona. Yeah. We didn't believe in him. They couldn't be our team of ATL because there's this injury here and there, and they've got multiple, you know, people down on defense. They keep bringing it. And, I bet against them at home this week. Big mistake, won't do it again.
Since this point last year, the Cardinals are tied with the Broncos for the best record in the NFL.
Let's not just skip past the Brown play. I mean, that's one of the plays of the year. He caught that over his shoulder. It was a great pass by Carson Palmer, but not an easy catch at all. To pull off an 80-yard play when you're down three like that, you know, the Eagles are thinking worst-case scenario, they're going to go to overtime in that situation, and Nate Allen just get burned. It was an awesome play. John Brown makes plays every week.
Yeah, he was easy speed, easy cheese, to use a baseball analogy, blowing past Nate Allen and Kerry Williams on the play to get open. And we talked about it, and I think other people have talked about it, that he's very much like T.Y. Hilton at Indy. He's a breakout guy. There's so much talent on this offense. If Carson Palmer can make the plays, and his line today was a little deceiving. He had those big two completions, didn't move the ball regularly for the team. But there's enough here with Ellington for them to score a lot of points, and the defense has surprised us this year.
The
so
Eagles
this is a
look
good team.
Vastly superior, though. Let's not forget about it. They went
vastly.
to the red zone three times. They didn't score a touchdown. They fumbled the ball inside the five. They got stopped on the 1-yard line right at the end of the game. They got intercepted at the 25. If Foles didn't make a total bonehead throw with about 9 minutes left when the Eagles had all the momentum and pretty much control of the game, they win the game. I think Foles
lost
it.
Yeah, but all those things are why they're not vastly superior also, aren't they? I mean, I think Arizona finds ways to win these games, and they've put the heat on the 49ers and the Seahawks now to try to keep pace.
Even if the Eagles were vastly superior, we don't trust their quarterback.
Right.
And you saw those two long plays. Their weakness as a team is their secondary.
All right, moving on. Tom Brady had as many touchdowns, that's five, as incompletions in 35 attempts on Sunday, leading the New England Patriots to a if you're a Bears fan, just a hideous 51-23 loss. I mean, how can you even imagine that happening to your team in Foxborough? The Patriots have won, is that three straight since that Monday night loss?
Four straight,
and they're doing it in a convincing manner. Greg, everything is great in Foxborough. Everybody's happy, and
Woo!
Here we go. What's their record now?
6-2.
6-2. Halfway to what, Mark?
12-4, as we predicted all along.
Every year, 12-4. Congrats.
Well, they have a tough stretch coming up, but this game did finally convince me that they're ready to start winning some of these tough games.
Let's give Greg a little credit. He went through a 10, 12, 14-day stretch
that it was tough
to be a Patriots fan because some questioned, you know, the viability of the quarterback and Tom Brady. Does he still have it? But, you know, after that two-week really rough stretch for Greg, bang. Look, where are you going? You're going right to the AFC Championship. You're going to lose the Broncos.
I wasn't sweating it that bad. But the reason why the offense has turned around is Gronk.
Exactly.
I mean, that's
just like last year, though, too, right?
Right. And that's the reason. It's not so much now that he's back on the field, but he's actually Gronk. And you saw a couple things today that defined their great offenses in 2010 through 2012. You saw the two tight ends with Tim Wright catching six passes and Gronk just dragging people all over the field. And you saw them playing hurry up at a faster pace than they have all year by far. I mean, they were getting the ball snapped with 20, 25 seconds left. The whole first half was a fast break, and I don't think the Bears were ready for it.
Was it shotgun?
A lot of shotgun.
They never used shotgun earlier this season.
Right, and the Patriots, it made me think maybe these guys, and I'm talking mostly about LaFell and Gronk is healthier, and you'd throw right in the mix. LaFell went over 100 yards, had a lot of tough catches. Maybe they know the offense well enough that they can just leave him on the field and let him go.
And we know New England has often recreated themselves offensively, and that, you know, that fast-paced offense they did use for a while. But it's, I, you know, again, New England takes players. LaFell could not make it work in Carolina. suddenly, what do you have, 120-something yards today?
124, 11 catches and touchdowns. A lot of really tough.
Tim Wright, too.
He looks good after the catch, too.
Yeah, and he made contested catches. I mean, Jonas Gray was their leading rusher by far, 17 carries today. He's their inside runner. The offensive line's a lot more stable. Again, it was against the Bears, though, who I think is going to have a habit of making some offenses look good.
Let's talk about the Bears for a second. 3-5 going into their bye week. This is a bad situation in Chicago now. And I guess the first question I have is because I remember when Trestman came to town, we raved about how special he was and got this offense back on track. The offense doesn't seem to be as dominated as it was a year ago when Cutler was healthy. And the defense obviously isn't there to back it up. Like, what has changed? Let's start with offense. What has changed with the Bears on offense this season?
Compared to last year?
Yeah.
The offensive line's not as good.
The offensive line's not as good. Marshall was injured for a good portion of the season. Jeffrey was injured for a game or two. Maybe they're not in rhythm. I don't know. Kurt Warner today on NFL Game Day Morning said, Jay Cutler's not the only problem with this team, but he's the biggest problem with this team.
And let's not remember, last year, the reason Wesley made Josh McCown a Making the Leap candidate is because he went on one of the hottest streaks we've seen in a long time in Trestman's system. And I think that made us think Trestman can do that with anyone. He's a quarterback whisperer, but you know, Cutler's Cutler, and everyone's waiting for this breakout MVP season. He is what he is.
Well, the defense was the problem today, though. You know, they picked on Kyle Fuller, the rookie who's played so well, until he basically left the game with an injury. So they either knew he was hurt or he was playing hurt or he was just so embarrassed he left the game. I mean, LaFell dragged him all over the field. Their safeties were terrible, and they couldn't stop the run when they needed to either.
How is Mel Tucker still running a defense in the NFL?
He won't be next year.
And speaking of defense, now that you've had half a game or half a season to look at the Patriots secondary, how different is it this year when compared to last year?
Brandon Browner made a big difference today, and Darrell Revis had a good day shutting down Brandon Marshall. You know, people have made the case that the Revis pickup wasn't that great, but he's been very solid, the best cornerback they've had in a long time. So maybe he's not Revis from before, but he's been excellent. And technically, entering the game, they had given up the fewest passing yards in the entire NFL this year. Had a nice day. Browner's been great. I don't know.
Dan, it's
the
another
defense is secondary.
It's another magical campaign, another beautiful autumn for Greg.
Yeah, enjoy that week in January when everyone's playing the playoffs and you're just game planning and getting ready.
And then they'll lose in the AFC Championship.
Probably.
So relax.
Here's a little bit more on Brady. This is a month after he was washed up, according to almost every analyst in print and on television. 27 of 27 to those three guys we talked about, Gronk, LaFell, and Tim Wright. And I saw somebody who was charting the game today counted not a single misfire from Brady all game.
That's what I'm saying. Go watch the game and put it up against Ben's spectacular game. Brady's right there because there was 5 incompletions and 5 touchdowns. 2 drops, I know, in there by Edelman. A throwaway or two. I don't know if there was a bad pass in there. He played it perfect. What more do you want?
He did something.
You're rolling your eyes. What?
No,
you can always do what you can do.
Wes's boy is Roethlisberger, and your boy's Brady.
My boy's Roethlisberger, too.
I have Geno Smith and Michael Vick. I have nothing!
Yeah.
I feel for you, Dan.
Brady did something no other quarterback's ever done. 350 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, and 85% completion.
Must be nice.
And then he added another touchdown just for fun.
Everything's great. Matt Prater hit a 48-yard field goal as time expired, leading the Lions to a 22-21 win over the Atlanta Falcons in the Wake Up at Wembley game. Was that an English accent or was that Australian?
That was subpar, but
okay.
No,
anyway, the Falcons blew a 21-0 lead in this game. Arthur Blank even made some comments afterwards that you simply cannot blow a 21-0 lead. Not a good sign for Mike Smith and company.
Well, you can.
Obviously you can.
I watched it.
Yeah, you can't do it.
If you're going to be the Falcons coach next year.
Thank you, Mark. So, Mark, this was a game of two halves. As you woke up early and you had your breakfast tart that the people in England eat and you watch this game, tell us about it.
I really have no memory of what happened here because it was roughly like 14 hours ago at this point. But it was the Falcons, it reminded me of the game that Wesley and I stuck around for, the Tampa Bay game where they just looked white hot out of the gate. I mean, everything Matt Ryan did worked, and in converse, Detroit couldn't get anything going. But then after halftime, because Detroit looked like they basically didn't even really wake up for this game either. But Stafford, who was very imperfect all day long, made enough throws, and they got some turnovers, and the Falcons really just melted. It was the largest allowed points, you know, comeback by another team in franchise history. A total wipeout in the second
and
half.
And what annoys me a little bit about the game, even though like I picked the Lions, so on some level I was happy that they won, but then at the same time, you get a delay of game penalty on the field goal miss. So you basically get rewarded for being horribly unprepared to get your field goal unit out there. They got a second chance, and then he hits it from 5 yards further. So if you're – can you even imagine? I was thinking about this after the game, how horrible a loss that is for the Falcons, who have to swallow that and then get on a plane and fly across the ocean.
Well, they only have themselves to blame for it. But also, Greg and I went crazy watching Jim Caldwell's hyper-conservative approach where –
he was trying to set up a 50-yard field goal with 40 seconds left for
Jimmy.
Matt Prater. They were 2 of 12 this year on field goals over 30 yards, I think it was. And yet he was trying to set up a 50-yarder. And then the Falcons took timeouts. It was a totally bizarre sequence. And there was a defensive holding call on a run, which I can't remember ever seeing that, much less in that situation. That's the only thing that even set up the field goal. It was a battle of who could coach worse between Caldwell
really
and Smith. It was a delicious game, though. It was one of the more entertaining finishes of the entire season.
I didn't see this game, so question for you guys who saw it. Is Golden Tate the greatest wide receiver in NFL history?
I'm going to go yes.
I'll say it's funny because he's almost in the Megatron mold right now.
Move over,
with no Megatron and no Bush in there. Like, he has had to do it all himself. There's nothing else. You know, they had three tight ends out as well. There's nothing else for Stafford to throw to right now. But he got a slow start.
Is he in the MVP discussion?
He's one of the most.
I think he is. He's on the outskirts of that conversation.
No, but he's one of
the
most valuable
receivers.
It's amazing how he makes plays every week to make them win the game. Stafford was brutal today. He was bad. He has been his worst season, I think, of his career this year.
I would say it has been the best free agent signing by any team.
Where, Wes, in your stable of boys, does Golden Tate have the honeymoon suite at this point?
No, Steve Smith is.
Oh, I knew that. I knew that.
Let's stop with this whole line of questioning.
What do you mean?
This is going to become a bit.
He's very much into individuals, this is one of his.
Everyone has
one
guys.
Of his guys.
And that's.
I think that was a shot at me.
What?
I'm into individuals.
You are.
Ooh,
you
let's
have
talk
instead
about of that
teams.
A little bit.
You have. Well, you are. You
let's
don't
talk
have a
about
team.
That.
You have a stable of players that get you jazzed up. That's accurate.
Well, I have teams every year. They just switch.
Well, you have teams every year as well.
Yeah.
One day, Wes will come back to the Bengals.
No, that will not happen.
It's gonna happen. And it will be a special day.
Before we move on from this game, in case any shadowy league figures are listening. Let's sign up for some more wake-ups at Wembley or whatever the heck you're calling it. Just get another fourth game on the program. You liked it. People loved it. Just another game to watch.
It
Why
was fun.
Not? It was
I liked
terrific.
Waking up to watch it
Before
at Wembley.
We leave this game, a Twitter follower asked me, will Mike Smith be canned within the next week or two?
No, I think they have too much respect. He's probably the best coach in franchise history, so I think they have too much respect for him to do something like that, and they'll do it at the end of the year.
That's what I thought, too.
Russell Wilson connected with Luke Wilson on a 23-yard touchdown pass late in the fourth quarter, leading the Seattle Seahawks to a 13-9 win over the Carolina Panthers. Wes, this wasn't the clean, everything-is-okay-now game for the Seahawks, I imagine, but they got it done.
I'm not sure if they deserved to win. It was extremely sloppy, dropped passes, missed throws by Russell Wilson, cost them a couple of touchdowns. Defensively, they dropped a couple of interceptions, flubbed some fumble recoveries. Cam Chancellor isn't himself. They held the Panthers to 9 points, but Kelvin Benjamin should have had 2 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. He dropped one, and Cam Newton overthrew him by a yard on another one. It was a sloppy game all around.
Big win, though, for the Seahawks. I mean, they would have gone to 3-4, 3 games back of the Cardinals. Look, they had a lot of wins like this last year. They pretty much had an identical game in Carolina last year. In fact, I think the final score – last year in Carolina was 12-7.
This
year it's 13-9. Similar sort of thing where they end up getting the scores in the fourth quarter to get it done.
Wes, what's going on with Marshawn Lynch? He's not getting the ball as much. I know before the games, NFL media columnist Michael Silver reported that Lynch harbors, quote, ill feelings toward coach Pete Carroll for his training camp holdout and off-season proclamations about a reduced workload. Are they just not feeding him the ball? Is that a case again today?
Yeah, he has a higher yards per carry average than last year, but his carries per game is down by almost 5. They're just not getting him. He's not getting into a groove. They're not handing the ball like every series and moving the chains. They're not allowing him to do that.
It's funny because Albert Breer and it talked to some people inside the organization last week in his notebook where there were a number of players watching Daryl Bevel closely, wanting to go back to that run-heavy offense, but they didn't. So they're not doing that still.
No, they're still passing more than they're running.
By a lot. I don't know what the ceiling for this offense is. I mean, what's the ceiling? As good as they were last year? I don't even know if that's possible.
I think they miss Harvin. I really do. Their receivers don't separate. They don't make plays on contested passes either. I think they're going to miss Harvin.
I mean, they came in scoring more points and churning out more yardage per game than last season.
That's fair. I guess my point is more that they need their defense to be that best in the league defense. That's
kind of the difference right now.
That's the roadmap for them winning the Super Bowl. It's not going to be because of their offense.
Ooh, jaunty. An offensive pass interference call on Steve Smith wiped out a go-ahead touchdown with seconds to play, allowing the Bengals to hold off the Baltimore Ravens with a 27-24 win at Paul Brown Stadium. The Bengals are back in first place in the hyper-competitive AFC North. Mark, I asked you, did the best team win today?
I really came in looking at Baltimore as the almost obvious best team in the North. And after what the Steelers did today, that I'm not convinced of anymore. And I can't buy the Bengals. This feels like every other Bengals-Ravens game that I've seen over the last 3 years where, they're going to split and you're going to get one good game for the home team and then the next. You know, this game really should have been Baltimore's. I don't know if that call on Steve Smith, I guess it felt like that, offensive pass interference.
It was close.
It was borderline to me, and it was a beautiful pass. Flacco, though, is culpable in this game a little bit. After he came in with 14 touchdowns, 5 picks, threw 2 bad interceptions today that gave, Cincinnati a chance to get back in and win the game. So, it wasn't the cleanest effort by the Ravens.
It's a problem for the Ravens that they've gotten swept by Cincinnati. Because any tie break, whether it's the two of them or three teams tying for the division, they're in a big hole now because of that 0-2 record. They kind of have to sweep the Steelers to make up for it.
When the Bengals get A.J. Green back, and in what we talked about before, that they aren't the same team, they really weren't. I think Mohamed Sanu did as much as you could ask for someone to step up and make some big plays. But the offense has just seemed completely out of sync. And I still can't believe in Andy Dalton. He had an awful fumble today where he just was spinning around like a marionette with the ball hanging out there. And that should have been the game, too.
Well, I know Andy Dalton is enemy number one of this podcast.
That's
and no one believes
true.
Nobody
no,
believes
so.
In the Bengals.
No, that's not fair.
But let's give
should we believe in the Bengals?
Well, we shouldn't maybe put him down as much as we do. That's always been where
he's been very clean this season.
First place in the AFC North right now. We talk about him like they're awful.
Because we've seen them, we've seen their little ruse in the playoffs before.
All right,
I don't think they're awful. They're very confusing because they were as bad as can be on defense the last 3 weeks, and they were great the first 3 weeks. So they were just figuring them out.
Let me finish my point though. That maybe they deserve some credit for beating the Ravens today when they don't have AJ Green, they don't have
Absolutely.
Marvin Jones. Like this is a nice win, and for Andy Dalton for that terrible fumble that led to the score that put him behind, you also led him down the field and got him in the end zone to give him the win. So while this team is not dominating anyone, if you're making a list of the top 5 teams in the AFC right now, they're probably 5 if you're lucky right now. They're probably not in anyone's top 3. There's still a team that's playing pretty well considering what they're up against.
One thing we've said about Cincinnati, even going back to last year's, they're one of the most complete teams in the AFC. I don't think it's accurate to say that we're all burying Dalton. I mean, he is going to do those one or two, three plays a game to get you killed. But Andy Dalton's had a nice season for the most part up to now. But do you look at him as someone that's a plus factor for that team?
No.
Well, that's all we're saying.
It's a huge win.
We're not all saying the same thing about him, number one.
I tend to think we're all on the same page, or the three of you are on the same page about Dalton. That he's not the answer.
He's not a plus factor. I think he's a reason that they are not winning playoff games.
He outplayed Flacco, though, today, at least just looking at the numbers. Is that fair to say?
Flacco, I think going back to week one, this was his worst game since week one.
I'll say something positive about the Bengals.
Ooh.
Now that Golden Tate is starting to get some respect, Mohamed Sanu is my pet project as the most underappreciated wide receiver in the NFL.
Ooh.
He is, I mean, what a lifesaver.
What about Greg Little?
I think he's appreciated properly.
Anything else in this game, guys? Okay, I guess not. TD says no. Moving forward, the Miami Dolphins ran back two Blake Bortles interceptions for touchdowns, giving Joe Philbin's team more than enough scoring in a 27-13 win over the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jaguars could not build off their big win over the Browns last week. Let's talk a little bit about Blake Bortles watching this game. He had six turnovers in the past 2 weeks. He leads the league with 12 interceptions. He has four pick sixes. And don't forget, all this was done. He didn't really start a game until week four. So Bortles, while has plenty of tools, he has not entered a great situation, and he's turning the ball over too much right now.
I think it's like your quarterbacks that go high in the draft invariably are going to incomplete, awful teams. At the same time, I think from what we've seen from Bortles, this guy is not afraid to fire the ball downfield, but he's not reading the field correctly. You know, he made some terrible throws in Cleveland last week. I didn't watch the game today, but I'm obviously that happened again. That's what you're going to get with this guy. I assume
any team, any team that plays a rookie quarterback, these games are going to happen in the game. You know, the games he's had where he's turning the ball over too much. Do you guys think it was the right move to roll with him this far, to go from week four on? Was this the right move?
Yes,
I do.
Yeah,
and I, even with all of these pick sixes, I'm still convinced he's going to be a star.
I agree.
How did Denard Robinson look, Dan?
He's the backfield guy there now. He's the man. He had a second straight game over 100 yards. They were feeding the ball. He even looked pretty good running between tackles. He was showing me something that I didn't really expect to see. Toby Gerhart, who's named Toby, so it should have been the tip-off. He is not the answer there. They gave him a nice amount of money. He's healthy today. He had four carries, so he's been marginalized, and look for OW to be their guy in the backfield going forward.
How about the Dolphins? I mean, we kind of sunk this team as irrelevant. Here they are, like the Bills, above 500 at midseason, almost 4-3. They're winning the games they're supposed to win the last few weeks. A little bit of credit for the Dolphins.
They deserve credit for sure. I will say that Ryan Tannehill took a little bit of a step back today. You want to see consistent play from him. So we'll see. I'm interested to see how he does next week, if maybe he just shrugs this off and continues. He got better in the second half, but there was a point in the first half, I think midway through the second quarter, they had four total yards on offense. So they were not moving the ball very well at all. Some good news if you're a Dolphins fan. Also, Tannehill and Mike Wallace hooked up on a 50-yard pass, which has been an issue with them all season. So that would be something to get excited about. And then a weird stat. I don't put too much into this, but Tannehill had his third straight game with a 30-yard rush. No quarterback has done that since 2004, Michael Vick. So as we talked about last week, this guy is doing it with his legs. He's rushed for about 50 yards three straight weeks. So Bill Lazor is incorporating a sneaky element of his game.
I think they're a bad team.
Yeah, this defense, too. I mean, they can get to the quarterback. Four sacks, eight quarterback hits today. Not playing the best offensive line in the AFC. We know that. But, you know, Dolphins and Bills, they're not going to win that division because the Patriots are blessed eternally. But maybe sneaky potential wild card candidates here.
Are we buying that?
Well, I'm not ready to count them out. That's for sure. I mean, the Bills, especially,
the
suddenly
AFC
5-3.
Yeah, the AFC is way deeper than last
year.
Yes,
it is
going to be a lot,
and much
tougher.
More than the NFC.
It is going to be a lot tougher to get into the playoffs, but I think they have a chance. These Bills and Dolphins.
The next team we're going to talk about is the team that I really wanted to gauge you guys on and what you think about them as playoff contenders. Transition. Jamaal Charles rushed for a pair of touchdowns to lead the Kansas City Chiefs to a 34-7 win over the St. Louis Rams. This is a game the Chiefs had a 2-1 advantage in time of possession. Alex Smith completed 85.7% of his passes. Wes, the Chiefs have won 4 of 5, as we said, with the exception of week one. They brought it every week. They've been a competitive team. They're winning now. Do you buy the Chiefs as a legit AFC playoff contender?
Well, I think you have to say, by their record and the way they've played, you have to include them in that, I don't know, half dozen teams that are around that 4-3, 5-3 that do have a shot at the wild card. They're not going to win that division, though.
Are they the best of those teams?
I don't think so. I think if you put the Ravens in that mix, I think the Ravens are the best of those.
See, Dan, if you point to Dalton as someone that's not appreciated, I would more quickly point to Alex Smith, 24 of 28.
Yeah, it was
not easy to do. I realize he's not whipping the ball 30 yards downfield, but
he manages the. I think he might be the best game manager of any quarterback in history if you label these game managers like that, like the Trent Dilfers and Brad Johnsons of the world.
Their offensive line was such an issue in the preseason, and they obviously lost a ton of people. Is it better now? Is it playing more cohesively?
Yeah, I think it's a lot better than we expected. We expected it to be a season-long Achilles heel for them, and it hasn't been. And part of that is, I'm sure that's a big part of why they do the dink and dunk offense.
Right. Smith and Reed deserve a lot of credit because they have Dwayne Bowe, who's a number two, getting paid like a number one. They don't have a number two. They don't really have a number three. I mean, Travis Kelce's a nice tight end, very nice tight end, but they don't have anyone at wide receiver. I mean, look at their leading receivers today. It's Bowe, then Kelce, then Charles, then Sherman, then Fasano, then Thomas, who's not really a receiver. You're down to your sixth receiver is Frankie Hammond, who caught a pass. You have no wide receivers on the team, and yet you're dialing up enough offense to win games.
Maybe they'll have Vincent Jackson in a day or two.
Ooh. You know what they do have? The NFL sack leader. Justin Houston had three today. Mm. He's up to 10, bypassed. I mean, I don't think he's playing as well as Von Miller, but he's got more sacks than him.
Wes, Brett Favre, a man that was a great football player. Now he's a maintenance worker, I understand. He's somewhere in the southern portion of the United States.
He wrangles Wranglers.
He said that Austin Davis could be the next Kurt Warner. You say the bloom is off the Austin Davis rose.
It is. He had 80 yards before the final garbage time drive today. No offense whatsoever in St. Louis.
They got creative in that 49ers game and a little bit against the Seahawks, too. Did that just...
They had a nice opening drive again today. Touchdown. Mm. And then did nothing the rest of the
way. That's all you can ask from this offensive coordinator.
That's all you're getting.
The Buffalo Bills took advantage of six New York Jets turnovers. That's a real number. Waltzing to an easy 43-23 win over Rex Ryan's free-falling team at the Meadowlands on Sunday. The Jets have lost seven straight, and they again benched Geno Smith in favor of Michael Vick after Geno Smith, and get this, people, threw three interceptions in the first quarter. He had more interceptions than completions. Luckily, because we are run by the boss, Greg Rosenthal, who knew this would be one of those great, epic meltdown games for the Jets, we wanted to get someone and bet them at the Meadowlands. So that's what we did. We have around the NFL's New York correspondent, or New Jersey correspondent, I should say, Connor Orr. How you doing, buddy? Welcome back to the Around the NFL podcast.
What's going on? I'm feeling a little bit better now. I'm a few hours removed from quite possibly the worst offensive football game I've ever seen.
Wow. Well, let's start right off the top because usually Kevin Patrick comes on here. His move when he signs on, when we call him, what's going on, fellas? Yours was similar, what's going on? So that's an issue right off the bat before we get to the Jets.
I'm going to have to come up with some sort of, New Jersey, provincial, hello or something like that. Like maybe a how you doing or something like that.
How you doing? All right. Okay, good. Don't force it, though. Be natural. Now tell us about this, one of the worst before. I'm used to cover the Jets. People that don't know, Connor Orr used to be the beat guy for the Jets for a couple of years. And you've seen a lot of ugly, grim business in the Rex Ryan era. Tell us what set this apart.
Well, I mean, just the fact that, I mean, early on, Geno seemed so hell-bent on just forcing the ball to Percy Harvin. And he, he threw an interception on that one deep ball down the Jets sideline. And then the drive after that, when Percy Harvin was out with the concussion, he threw the exact same route, only to Jeff Cumberland. So I don't know how he thought one would work out a little bit better than the other. And then, then you bring in Michael Vick, who fumbles four times and really throws two interceptions. One of them end up getting called back. So, I mean, I think it was the first time since the 1991 Arizona Cardinals that they had two quarterbacks in one game have three or more turnovers.
Ow! So, Jets football! Go for it!
Wow. Give us a little report card on Percy Harvin's first game as a Jet.
I actually thought – I do agree with Eric Decker. I think he's going to open up the offense. He ended up getting 40 snaps. They used him primarily on the outside, a little bit in the slot, probably about five or six times in the slot. And then I think he got about six or seven carries out of the backfield, which was interesting. Really, it's what I thought Chris Johnson was supposed to be doing there. Apparently – He's all but resigned to the fact that he's no longer a part of the offense, it sounds like.
I'm going to try to find the quote that I heard from Chris Johnson after the game.
That's right. You were in the locker room. Did you go to the Bills or the Jets? I guess you probably went to the winners, or you went to talk Harvin.
No, I went to I wanted to see what was up with Geno and Vic. I wanted to see them talk. I thought that was definitely going to be the most interesting part of the night, and it didn't disappoint. I mean, the dynamics there are just fascinating. I mean, Rex just, you know, he's been there for so long and has never had a dependable quarterback, and like you can just tell he's just so worn down. And both of those guys are talking. Neither of them really is campaigning for the starting job at this point.
They don't want it.
Why would you?
And Rex didn't announce it after the game. But just to circle back, Chris Johnson was asked about the Jets quarterback situation. This was after he had, I don't know, three carries, something like that. He said,
3 carries, 7 yards.
Yep. He said, I don't even be in the game, so I don't know.
What does that mean?
I don't know. So let's talk about the Bills a little bit, because another, you know, frisky middle-of-the-pack AFC team took advantage of an outrageous amount of turnovers by the Jets, but they did some things today.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they went, and I'm surprised, actually, you know, I did kind of take a jab at Marone and his coaching staff for not going downfield more. I mean, if, you know, they went deep to Sammy Watkins twice, and, you know, two times he took it 61 and 84 yards. He should have had two touchdowns. You know,
he showboated. Then, he showboated trying to show off during his first long reception, and he was dragged down from behind, kind of in the most embarrassing 84-yard catch ever.
Yeah, by the converted wide receiver. So
right.
I mean, that's one thing the Jets have going for them is Rex Ryan knows how to. It's like, and he's a very Belichickian of him to scrape the bottom of the roster and try to find a safety since nobody else seems to be working out there.
Forget Brady and Roethlisberger. Kyle Orton averaged 14 yards per attempt today, 17 throws, and he had 4 touchdowns.
He did something that no quarterback has done since Bubby Brister in 1991. 10 or fewer completions and 4 touchdowns.
Mm.
Wow.
Wow.
I like that.
Connor.
This is a historic game that I witnessed.
It is. See, Greg knows how to push all the buttons. He's like that manager in the playoffs that every move he makes is working. Greg Rosenthal.
Ned
Connor
Yost, baby.
Wow, good job, Greg. All right, thank you, Connor.
Thank you, guys. Have fun.
Hey, while we're on the topic of Kyle Orton, I want to read something, a feature in the Buffalo News that Greg Rosenthal brought to my attention. The headline, and Mark, you should pay attention to this because you have assassinated this man's character in the past. Kyle Orton, the Bills' quiet warrior. And here's a line from the piece. Anyone who has interacted with Orton on a significant level can attest he is a man of passionate convictions away from the field. He's known as an erudite, cultured, and politically inspired. He's an advocate for social changes, causes, and workers' rights. He's a deep thinker, Mark Sessler.
Well, so, I mean, we've got Odell Beckham, that strategy is to miss a month of work and come back and become a star. And now you've got Kyle Orton that's all these great things and decides to walk away with millions of dollars from Jerry Jones. So what is he teaching us?
You know, I want you to go and read this article, Tim Graham.
I will read it.
Great,
but I mean, I'm not
going to
– what do you, you – come on.
And just imagine – just imagine instead of the words Kyle Orton on the page, it says Mark Sessler, because I see some similarities.
Ooh.
Here.
I don't know Kyle
philosophical
Orton as
deep
a person,
thinker.
And I mentioned that all along. I don't like the way he dealt with the Dallas Cowboys. He hung him out to dry.
You spoke of him as a man of low moral fiber.
I did not like that particular lever pull.
Maybe, like a lot of deeper thinkers who have played football, they have some issues with the game, and they do wonder what it should mean for their lives.
What does it all
Maybe
mean?
That was what Kyle Orton was doing.
Well, okay, but he also was like, let me get paid for doing nothing and let me get paid a lot. So suddenly we're painting him as this thespian or something that walks around doing all these wonderful intellectual things he walked away with millions of dollars with doing nothing. I think we'd all like to do that.
Yeah. I would.
I like to think of you, Mark, as the guy that what does it all mean? You're like the biggest what does it all mean guy I know. So there's a connection here, I think. There's some
tissue.
I
don't dislike him if he is the way they described him here, but I haven't met him, and I'm not going to just take this as gospel.
Do we need a detente?
Number 9 overall pick, Anthony Barr, forced a fumble and returned it for a touchdown to deliver the Vikings a 19-13 overtime victory over the Buccaneers in Tampa. Greg, this was a game in which the Vikings dominated for 3 quarters, blew a 10-point lead, then managed to bring it home. I imagine Mike Zimmer... And by the way, congrats, Mike Zimmer, for knocking out those kidney stones. 2 procedures to get rid of kidney stones.
Not
really
pleasant.
The worst thing in the world to even think about. And now he gets a nice win after some tough losses.
Big week.
Tell us about the game, Greg.
Well, the kids in
Minnesota. And your kidney stone issues yourself.
The kids in Minnesota, you got something to be excited about. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater had a very up-and-down game, but on his toughest throws, he made completions. I mean, the touchdown to Jennings was a beautiful play while he was getting hit. A lot of big third-down throws to Cordarrelle Patterson, who led the team in receiving yards, 86 yards today. Bridgewater sets up overtime with a game-tying drive. Barr, who makes a couple wow plays every week, wins it. There's your two first-round picks. Meanwhile, Sharif Floyd had a nice game. Everson Griffin's been on fire. So some of the building blocks for the Vikings are kind of coming around.
We also got Cordarrelle Patterson finally showing up, 86 yards off six catches. And I really like Jerick McKinnon in the backfield, too. And he had a big day, what, 80-something yards?
Yeah, he was solid. You know, the Bucs couldn't move the ball. I think they had 51 yards midway through the third quarter.
So typical Mike Glennon game.
Man, he didn't have any time. I mean, granted, he didn't play well. They had five straight three and outs. But the Minnesota defensive line has something going here with Floyd, Griffin. Linval Joseph's been a little bit of a disappointment, but Robeson. Griffin gets after it. I mean, they've had a good couple weeks the last 2 weeks. They should have won both the games.
Are the Bucs the worst team in the NFL?
I think they are right now. I would take the Raiders and the Jags over them on a neutral field. Because I think they've been lucky. The one game they won was lucky. And even the games they're in, it feels like they're lucky. They were lucky to get this thing to overtime.
Will Vincent Jackson be in Tampa Bay by Wednesday?
I don't think so. He only had one catch today, by
the way.
Well,
it sounds like they're getting a lot of offers from people, too. And this team almost needs to be blown up from scratch. Why not?
Well, it's weird that they want to trade him so badly. Because I get the sense that it's Tampa saying, for sale, guys. I don't know if they're getting a lot of good offers because he'd be traded if they were getting a lot of good offers. I think they want to get rid of him.
Impromptu game of what's more likely.
What's more likely?
Has a job January 1st, Lovie Smith or Mike Smith?
I say Lovie Smith is more likely to have a job just because he's only been there a year. They probably want to give him more than 1 year.
Lovie Smith, he'll keep his job.
I don't know. I mean, we're just saying they're a team. They weren't expected to be a rebuilding team or some team in the tank this year. They could go 2-14.
It's a fair question because the Bucs were one team that we all thought, oh, you know, Lovie Smith has just – he had a nice sabbatical year. He's walked into a playoff-ready defense. Well, that's what we were saying back in April and May.
And some bad losses.
He's been there before. You can't keep firing coaches 1 year into the contract. I mean, Schiano got fired a couple years into it. They'd be playing three different coaches $5 million a year if they went for another one. And he has a history with the Bucs.
It's just fair for Dan to bring up his name because it's been one of the most disappointing coaching jobs of the year.
Thanks, Mark.
That's fair.
Get props for the host. That works.
The Browns avoided becoming the first team in NFL history to drop back-to-back games to winless teams. This late in the season, they took care of business with a 23-13 win over the winless Oakland Raiders. Mark, first thing, I just want to say congratulations on the win. Your team bouncing back. I'm not so happy that you hedged your bets and picked against your own team. It seemed like you compromised your honor a little bit there, but you won and you lost today.
I did not compromise any honor because if you think because I grew up rooting for the Browns and I'm going to pick them 16 straight games,
at home against the potentially one of the worst teams in recent history, that's why I was a little disappointed.
Look, this honestly was not a great performance by Cleveland.
The Raiders outgained the Browns by 80 yards.
Well, Cleveland has some issues on defense. They also put the heat on Carr towards the end, kind of put this thing out of question at some point. But they've got issues, and this was the third best rushing team in football 2 weeks ago. Today, 39 yards at 1.6 yard per carry.
Whoa!
They cannot run the football anymore.
And you've talked Alex Mack up as a major missing piece here.
And I know that you think, Dan, that I'm overselling that, but I really think what Mack brought to that line was cohesiveness, and he would call out the adjustments, everything. Hoyer's not experienced to do that the same way that a veteran quarterback would. They have a guy that brought off the practice squad to take that job right now, and it shows. No running back could get lanes, get open, break tackles.
Alex Mack?
I really think for the way this team was playing before that it is it fatal? It's fatal if you wanted them to do more than go 8-8, 9-7 tops.
There won't be any return of the Mack?
next year, maybe.
Look, if Mac is that good, he should have been the MVP. I mean,
he's a two-time Pro Bowler.
That's kind of what I've been saying.
But it's he's a center, so he's going to be ignored
by
everyone.
No, I'm not saying it's ignored, but it's one player. Okay, I get it for a couple weeks. If that ends up being the thing that ruined their season, it's not the thing. I mean, there's other things around that could be going better. Maybe it's a coincidence he was gone. I'm just saying.
I just don't know what else to point to because it happened right when he went out.
No, I know. The running game, it makes sense.
Yeah. Jordan Cameron went out with a concussion. That's bad news. Tell us about Brian Hoyer. He had obviously a terrible game last week. Bounced back a little bit, at least in the second half.
He improved down the stretch of this game, but they really looked disjointed on offense again because they're such a play action passing team that when the defense doesn't believe in the run, you're exposing your quarterback. That would happen with any team that can't run the ball. You know, he continues to make throws to receivers that are like 5'7" and 5'8". They really need to get Josh Gordon back. I know that they really want it. Pettine said after the game that Jordan Cameron was the absolute central part of this game plan. And when it went out in the first quarter, they struggled to pick it up from there. And they played a bad defense. And so any plays they made, the numbers for Hoyer, he had 111 rating. He wasn't 111 rating looking quarterback on the field today. He's a middling guy that is still learning the game.
They have a winning record. When was the last time they had a winning record this late in the season? 2008 or whatever?
I think maybe 2001 because they were 4-2 in 2001.
All right, let's play a fun little game. I incorporate all of you gentlemen in it. I'm going to go around the horn, quick fire. I'm going to go through the rest of the Raiders' schedule. Just give me win-loss as I go through the schedule. I'll start with Mark to Greg and then back. Here we go. Mark, at Seahawks.
Loss.
Home to Broncos. Wes.
Loss.
At Chargers.
That's a loss.
Home to Chiefs.
Loss.
At Rams.
Give them the win. They got to win one.
Yeah, I'll give them a win.
Yay!
Oh, no way. Home to Niners.
That's a loss.
At Chiefs.
Win.
All right, we're ruining the game now. Home to Bills.
Win.
What a team this is.
They're out of rounds.
At Broncos to close it out.
Loss. Sorry, we ruined
the
game.
So according to the Around the NFL team, we're 3-13.
I'm going to take the Rams win back and just give them 2-14.
One is fine.
I would almost eat Wes's softball pants if they win three games, but I won't go that far. This team, the point I was making is there's not really a gimme here for a bad Raiders team.
They're a two-win team.
If they're lucky. They could lose 16. It's not insane.
Reggie McKenzie is so gone after the season.
Derek Carr is, I think, too good, actually. That's the reason why I don't pick them, is their offense and their quarterback isn't terrible.
He'll get a win. He is extremely good under pressure, and especially when, you know, late in the first half, just drove them right down the field. He doesn't seem like a rookie in some ways. They'll get at least a win or two.
He's been the best rookie so far.
Yeah.
Troy Aikman went 1-15 as a rookie. Fun fact. Arian
Foster. Total parallel.
Yep. Arian Foster went over 100 yards rushing for the sixth time this season, leading the Texans to a 30-16 road win over the Tanosa Titans in Zach Mettenberg's NFL debut. Zach Mettenberg completed 27 of 41 passes for 299 yards, two touchdowns and an interception. I guess showed some promise replacing Clipboard Jesus and Jake Locker. That didn't stop, though, J.J. Watt, who didn't take kindly. And I didn't like it either. Greg was defending this for some reason downstairs. I didn't like Mettenberger posting tons of selfies and instant Snapchats and having a grand old time on social media. And then J.J. Watt came out and buried him for it after the game. Said this is the NFL, not high school. It's true. God, calm down, Zach Mettenberg.
Just sounded like a get-off-my-lawn thing. I wouldn't think it was a big deal that Mettenberger's having some fun posting pictures. Who cares?
He might be the only player on that team with any personality, though, so give him that.
Kevin did.
Did I call him Mettenberg the whole time?
Yeah.
Kevin did send. Sixth round pick. We'll be out of the league in 3 years.
Kevin did send in his summary. That game sucked. Mettenberger was meh. Made some bigger throws than Clipboard Jesus, but was scattershot. Arian Foster, best player on the field. Arian Foster has had like an amazing and quietly amazing season. He's carrying them.
Said 100 yards in 6 out of 7 games, I think. And the only game he didn't have 100 yards was coming back from a hamstring injury. He wasn't 100%.
Yeah, Jadeveon Clowney, actually. It's pronunciation correction day. Only a tackle. Didn't really do much.
Also, it's Mettenberger. Right. Greg. That. J.J. Watt, while we're just throwing out stats, 2 sacks, 4 fumbles, 2 tackles for a loss, and he knocked down another pass. So as great as Von Miller has been, J.J. Watt is going to win Defensive Player of the Year.
Yes.
Hey, good job by Bill O'Brien. They won two games last year. They won four this year.
He'd have to vanish in like an alien vehicle to not win that award right now.
We need to turn the page on Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Well, you could have said that 3 years ago, and I would have agreed with you.
Yeah, who are they turning to?
Yeah, to Ryan Mallett?
Yeah, they have to figure out what Ryan Mallett is.
I mean, they're competitive every week.
And Tom Brady.
Isn't that basically all they could have asked for?
Bill Belichick figured out what he was, or at least in his estimation, he was worth like a pile of pens. I mean, they traded him for nothing. They wanted no part of it.
Smart football analysts have said this guy is an NFL starter. Mike Mayock has said it. Let's see, because we know Ryan Fitzpatrick isn't going to give you more than six wins in a season.
Which takes us to Sunday Night Football at the Superdome. The Saints get back on track. Mark Ingram rushed for a career-high 172 yards, leading the Saints to a 44-23 win over the Green Bay Packers on Sunday night. A game in which the Packers jumped ahead early, and it looked like, more trouble for the Saints, and the Packers are going to keep rolling, but it didn't work out that way. The Saints got back into it, then they took the lead, and then they just ran away with it in the second half. Chris Wesson, what did you see out there?
This is what happens when you quit jerking around and get the ball in Mark Ingram's hands.
Mm. You do, as Dan mentioned, have a stable full of boys, but I feel like there's one guy at the front of it. I mean, no one was...
Well, Steve Smith.
That's true. Well, but no
I
one...
I feel like I'm more invested in Ingram this year.
This year, I feel like no one can say that they were ahead of you on the Mark Ingram rejuvenation bandwagon.
There are still people doubting him, and to me, it's silly. All you have to do is turn on the film. The guy is running better than any back outside of DeMarco Murray and maybe Arian Foster.
And in a day of great quarterback play, there were nine quarterbacks that threw over 300 yards. We talked about what Ben Roethlisberger did. We talked about what Tom Brady did. Drew Brees also delivered a gem, 27 of 32 for 311 yards, three touchdowns, averaged almost 10 yards per attempt, 138 passer rating. Drew Brees showed up and almost in a very important development for the Saints, gave them a little bit of their swag back, especially in their own building. We're tough to beat at home.
Well, they hit vertical passes, which they hit one last week to Still, so that was a nice start, but they tried three or four. And then today, they hit one to Brandon Cooks off play action. They hit one to Kenny Stills deep, and that's the Saint offense, the big play offense. And they started to look like that today, and Jimmy Graham looked a little bit healthier and got a touchdown too.
I think this is what we expected in August, that you got those two guys going deep. They use Cooks creatively. Jimmy Graham's a weapon in the red zone, and it was easily Breeze's best game of the year.
Well, one of the reasons I picked them this week was not just because I'm a homer and went to school there, but that I thought they played really well in New Orleans. In Detroit. That looked like it was the turnaround of their season, and then they totally gagged the last 4 minutes. But for the most part, it was a really good game. And the defense did some similar things tonight where they didn't get too crazy with blitzes. They didn't play that well. They didn't force a single punt in the whole game, but they didn't give up big, big plays the whole game, and they got a few turnovers and a few breaks.
And the timing is perfect for the Packers. The good thing that came out of this game was they hit their bye now, which is good because Aaron Rodgers did something to his hamstring in this game. He was limping pretty badly by the time he exited. They get a week now to regroup. The Packers are playing better than anyone going into this game. Now they hit a speed bump here. Are we to worry about the Packers now, or is this just one of those situations where a game got away in a tough environment?
I'm not worried about them. I think they're a very good team. Their defense might not be quite as good, but they're better than they were last year. And, you know, Mark Ingram wasn't the only back with a career game tonight. Eddie Lacy, 182 yards from scrimmage. His best game by far as a receiver, bolstered by a 67-yard screen pass in which he looked dynamite.
8 for 123 as a receiver, Eddie Lacy.
I mean, it seemed like a miracle for most of the game whenever the Saints could force a field goal. And then they get a tip in the red zone and pick that off. A rookie receiver, Davante Adams, stops his route, and they get a tip for another interception. Otherwise, the Packers are going to put up 40 points in this game. They didn't have Morgan Burnett. They didn't have Sam Shields. I think they'll be fine. They are a game back of the Lions, though, so we have a little bit of a NFC North race.
Their collapse in this game coincided with Rodgers' hamstring injury. They didn't score another point until garbage time, really, after that hamstring injury. And I thought they moved the ball well all night. Rodgers' fourth career 400-yard game, even though they pulled him early.
How about no punts in this game? It's only happened three times in NFL history. Two of those times were in Packers games this season. Packers-Bears in week four, no punts, and then tonight.
That is weird stuff,
that
Greg.
That's a crazy stat.
And how many teams have a third running back like Mark Ingram that they can just roll out there? Not that he's
third. Give me a break.
I'm just saying.
That guy's the number one back.
Pierre Thomas gets hurt. Skyree Robinson gets hurt. And it doesn't.
That's the best thing that could really happen to this team.
If I'm Steve Smith, I'm worried about my honeymoon suite and Wes's stable of boys, because this man is coming on hard right now. Mr. Ivory could be taking over. Did I say Ivory?
Yeah, you said Ivory.
No, well, who cares? It's late.
Look, I'm not kidding about this. The Pierre Thomas, Kyrie Robinson injuries were the best thing to happen to this offense. Sean Payton needs to get out of his own way and get the ball to Mark Ingram.
Maybe he will. Thursday night, that's a good little game we got here. NFC Bang. South title or lead on the line there.
Only on NFL Network.
Ow!
All right, that's it for Sunday's edition of the Around the NFL podcast. We'll be back with three more shows and the upcoming week, including Wednesday, our next show. Thank you for listening. As always, this is Dan Hansa signing off for the Sizzler, the Mailman, the Boss, and TD with a hat on behind the glass. Till Wednesday.